Warning, this show contains strong language and scenes of a queer nature.
Yes!
Hey, I'm Josh, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 1 of the Art of Being Queer podcast. Here's a snippet of what's to come.
People who maybe grew up at a time when queer was such a slanderous, horrible word might not understand or appreciate how it's being used now. I made my family go to Dollywood so I could give her a painting when I was 12 years old. It is hard to make authentic art when you are hiding who you are. Even if it pisses people off, that's okay. When I went to pick it up, his letter to me about how the devil was guiding my hand when I made this painting. Art can be a great way for both sides of any issue to communicate and share their perspective. And the Westboro Baptist Church somehow got a hold of it, and they were threatening to come and protest at my wedding. And the little boy wearing his mom's red heels was definitely me. You don't understand.
So let's jump straight into it and meet the guest of the episode, Paul Richmond. Hey, Paul, would you like to give an introduction?
Sure. I'll try. I am an artist. I do oil paintings that I show in galleries. I also do a lot of illustration work, book covers. I work for an LGBT publishing company and do the cover art for them. I went to art school, graduated in 2002. And came out of the closet shortly afterwards and started looking around for other queer artists that I could, you know, be inspired by. And it was really difficult. It was before social media was very prevalent. And I could find, you know, like Tom of Finland and some more historic artists, but it was difficult to connect with other artists working today. So, you know, that has changed a bit recently, but there are a lot of queer themes in my work, and I explore all those issues, you know, on canvas. So it's been a great way to connect with other people in the community.
You mentioned a little bit about making this artwork when you first came out. Do you want to tell me about your first ever queer art piece?
Shortly after I came out of the closet, I started working on some paintings in my apartment that were just dealing with different aspects of that. So, you know, what it felt like to, you know, be with a man for the first time, or just kind of trying to figure out who I was in this new world, and all of those things. So I was making these paintings, but I wasn't yet out to everyone in my family and in my community. So ironically, as I would finish the paintings and they dry, I would unstretch them and roll them up and put them in my closet. They did serve an important purpose. They really helped me to explore and figure out what I was going through. And art has always really been that for me. But it was my friend Melissa saw them one day when she was visiting and said, "You really should actually like share these, because other people might get something out of it too." With some, you know, support from her, I did submit them to some local shows and things, and I was really surprised by how much people did connect with them, and it just reinforced for me that art is this awesome communication tool. So it made me want to do more and dive deeper into some of my own experiences, because that helped me to find other people who could relate to those things.
So the paintings finally came out the closet then?
They did, finally.
So you spoke about social media a little bit in your introduction. What difference has that made to you as an artist?
So one of the ways that queer art for me has changed a lot since social media came along has just been through connection with other artists and not feeling like I am the only person out here exploring this stuff, because I knew I wasn't. I knew there had to be people, you know, all over the place dealing with these same things through art. When I first started doing it, the only queer art that I could find that was readily available online was intensely erotic art, which is great. And I have an appreciation for that, but that's not what I wanted to create myself. So it has been, social media has been really important for connecting with other artists. Also connecting with opportunities for my art. I grew up in Ohio, which is in the Midwest here in the United States. So it's a pretty conservative area. A lot of galleries in my community were not a good fit for the work I was doing. But because of the internet, I was able to connect with galleries in other locations. So you can basically live anywhere now and, you know, find people who appreciate what you do. And that includes collectors, too. I think there are a lot of collectors, especially of queer art, who are comfortable buying directly from artists, where 10, 15 years ago, people were primarily only buying work in galleries, which was very limiting for somebody who does work like this. It's not necessarily a mainstream subject matter, so a lot of art galleries don't want to carry it. If you get labeled as a queer artist, then they think, well, only queer people are going to want to buy it, and that's limiting. So, you know, the internet has helped me find people who appreciate what I do, and it's also helped me connect with other artists that I appreciate too.
Yeah, social media is great for connecting with other artists, and doing this podcast would have been impossible without social media. One of the issues that a lot of artists bring up though is censorship. Have you faced any issues with this?
It hasn't been as big of an issue for me as far as censorship. I do have a number of different series, some that are more, I guess you could say, traditional fine art that, you know, people in galleries are comfortable showing. And then I have some that is more overtly queer. I have some like campy fun stuff that I call the Cheesecake Boys. That's my own kind of pinup art. So to different degrees, I think what's been interesting for me, not necessarily so much censorship because of nudity or content, but I've had a lot of people that I have worked with in different areas encourage me to censor myself and to censor some of the really queer art because they feel that it prevents collectors and other opportunities from coming my way. So even though I might have some paintings out there that someone would appreciate, if they're scrolling through, like if you Google my name, it's always the most extreme stuff that comes up first. A lot of people in the art industry have said, that's not good. You should change your name for your serious art and censor myself in that way. I've never wanted to do that, though, because my feeling is if someone's going to be turned off of my art because of one thing that I do, then I don't want them owning anything. I'd rather just sell it to somebody else.
Yeah, someone who appreciates all the work that you do.
Right, exactly.
So moving on from this, I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on the current media representation.
As a white cisgender male myself, it was something that I didn't realize at first, because when I came out and started discovering gay films and what gay art I could find, it was basically myself I was seeing represented in those things. And it didn't occur to me at first what it might feel like to somebody who didn't look like me that was coming out into this community that was not seeing themselves represented. And I think that's really important. I just finished doing a big mural last week with a good friend of mine named Bryden, who's transgender. And we were talking about that a lot, about the cis actors playing trans characters, and just his experience of, you know, going to Pride and having people not know what the trans flag is, or he would be there with his partner, a female, and everyone was making fun of them because they seem like a straight couple. And those are things that I would never have thought about, you know? So yeah. I do. I think there's a fine line that I have to walk as an artist in terms of being true to myself and portraying what I know and not necessarily trying to co-opt somebody else's story. But at the same time, I relate to all people and I look for the things that I have in common with people. So when I'm painting figures, I really do try to reach out and connect with a diverse group of people and represent those who might not be represented in other ways. It's not me trying to tell their story for them, but it's kind of just like saying, hey, I know you're here, you're a part of this community too. And I think that is really important.
With the submissions that we receive, I see people not only representing themselves, but representing the whole community, which I think is really important.
That's our job. I think that's our job as artists too, is to create work that will make people think differently, question all of the rules of our society, because otherwise people just get comfortable living this black and white existence, and that's not what we're about.
So would you like to talk us through some of your pieces now? I'll let you choose which one you want to talk about first.
Okay, I'll start with, because it's probably the most fun, the Dolly Pop Guild. That was one of the one of the earlier paintings that I made after coming out and being out for a little while, but it was a celebration of my childhood love of Dolly Parton. I grew up wanting to be Dolly in every way possible. I made my family go to Dollywood so I could give her a painting when I was 12 years old, and she was, you know, wonderful. So that painting was about that, and the little boy wearing his mom's red heels was definitely me. And it's, I think, using the imagery from The Wizard of Oz in a way to tell my own story. And that's a lot of what you see happen in my work, because I like to take some of these conventional images and then put my own spin on them. Just same with the Noah's Gay Wedding Cruise piece. That one was a pretty controversial painting at the time when I made it. It got a lot of coverage and a lot of people were mad about it, too. But I took the imagery of Noah's Ark and told a different story with it, including queer couples, queer animal couples. There were these cute gay penguins in a zoo somewhere, I think in New York, but so they're in there. But then, you know, celebrity queer couples too. And then the sinners who are drowning in the water are the politicians who were so adamantly opposed to this marriage equality movement. And it was my way of sending a little message about that.
I love that piece to begin with, but I love it even more now I've heard the background.
Yes, it was. Well, and like I said, my background was in illustration, so it's very natural for me to tell stories and to incorporate some kind of political, you know, political cartoon kind of style into my work. But that one got a lot of attention because of the various people that were included in the Westboro Baptist Church somehow got a hold of it, and they were giving me a hard time and threatening to come and protest at my wedding and a bunch of stuff because they apparently did not appreciate it. But it's all good. You know, I feel like for me, I certainly go and participate in marches and protests and things whenever I can, but I feel like my most effective form of activism is through art. So I don't mind at all when people call me a gay artist or a queer artist. And I know other people might have issues with that because it can be limiting. But so much of my work is like this and has these themes that for me, it's a badge of honor. And I like being able to share how I feel. Same with the painting, I Won't Tell If You Won't. That was before they overturned the don't ask, don't tell policy in the U.S. military. So it was banning queer people from serving. And this was a piece that I made that kind of addressed that in a rather shocking, provocative way to some people. And then the two angels in the background are Lady Gaga and Kathy Griffin, because they were both kind of at the time outspoken advocates for that cause. So I try to have fun and also deliver a pretty strong message when I make work like that.
I really like how you've used images that people all recognize, but presented them in kind of a political and funny way.
Uh-huh. Right. I love that. I mean, it's basically a window into my head because there is a lot of crazy stuff happening up there. But I like including things that make the images accessible to people. You know, they're colorful, they're fun for the most part. But they also do deliver a message. And actually, the Cheesecake Boys series, I've included, I think, a few of those for you. The Cheesecake Boys, the Beach Bum, the Bear Tamer. That's my series that's kind of based on the pinup girls from the 40s and 50s, only I use male models. So it's really fun and silly. But at the same time, there is a message there that has to do with these gender roles and what we think is sexy for women versus men, because you never saw men portrayed that way. It was only female models. Any male pinup was always very in control of the situation. It was never this kind of silly, goofy thing that was happening to them. And I always wondered, why is that? Why have we set up the standard in our society that, you know, we have one idea of for women and a different idea for men? So it's a, I like playing with those themes and these issues that are on my mind, but trying to have some fun with it too. And I think that for me is a really effective way of getting the ideas across.
It's the first time that I've seen work in the style of the 40s pinups with the gender roles reversed like this. And this collection really took off, didn't it?
It really was popular. It was actually so popular, I started doing these weekly drawings of them that I would post on my website for people to download in color.
Since this recording, I've been lucky enough to get my own pinup created by Paul. And it's included in his two new Cheesecake Boy publications. To find more information out about this, head over to Paul's website, paulrichmondstudio.com.
And like thousands of people were doing this every week. So then I ended up getting to publish a coloring book of the Cheesecake Boys. And it's been like selling really well for the last couple of years. And people all over the world are coloring their own pinups. So that's been really fun. So, I like making fun, accessible stuff. And then also being able to go in and paint something serious or that, you know, that deals with deeper emotions that I'm feeling. It's challenging, and a lot of instructors in art school will tell you that you should only do one thing, that people will only accept, you know, that an artist does one style, and so they become familiar with you and they expect that from you. But I've just always been too all over the place for that. And so I have to do what's right for me. And sometimes I want to be silly. Sometimes I want to be serious. And if people can't handle that, that's too bad.
So Paul, earlier on, we were talking about the reaction that you got to Nosegay Wedding Cruise. Is this the worst reaction that you've ever got?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I've gotten a lot of bad reactions to a lot of things. But I don't ever mind that. I did it first, you know, at the very beginning, when I first started making this type of art and posting it, you know, I still wasn't totally secure in my own identity. So these images were out there and people were saying whatever they were going to say about them and writing blogs and things about them. And I would read everyone and I would read all the comments. I wanted to know what does everyone think about me? Because I was, I think, trying to validate myself or feel better about who I was. And that's not the place to go for that, because you have no control over who's out there and what they're thinking or saying. And usually the people who take the time to comment are not the ones whose opinions you really want. So it was a learning process, but most of the pieces that I've done that have gotten a lot of really kind of negative feedback have also, you know, been received really positively by other people. And I feel like the conversations, no matter which way they go, help to raise awareness about the work. I've noticed that whenever even a negative article comes out about a piece I've done, it always seems to lead to more sales and more interest in what I'm doing. So now I know, don't read the comments, you know, make what I want to make, put it out there and don't care. I have a few select friends when I finish a painting that I send, I take a picture with my phone and send it to them and ask what they think. And then everybody else can think whatever they want.
I think that's the best attitude to have when you're putting work out. This is the first time that I put myself out there like this. But seeing how you and all the other artists put yourself out there has just made me realize that I'm kind of limiting myself.
Yeah, it is true. And, you know, I think going back to your social media question, there have been a lot of incredible connections and opportunities that have happened because I've always been so open about, you know, what I'm thinking and feeling and what I'm going through. And a great example of that, just a few years ago, this young man from India connected with the queer themes in my art and sent me a message on Instagram, and we started chatting, and he told me that, you know, he was also gay and was really struggling because it was very difficult where he lived, and that he's also an artist. So he shared some of his work with me, and it was incredible. You know, I was in art classes from the time I was a little kid. I was just sort of always, you know, supported and encouraged. And I always knew I wanted to be an artist, but he didn't have any of that. He was developing this all on his own, and he had no idea how good he really was. And I said, if you want to get out of that environment where you are, you should think about applying to art school in the US, and you could, you know, come over here, pick a location where you'll be able to be yourself and not have to worry about that, because it is hard to make authentic art when you are hiding who you are. And I sent him some resources and things about scholarships and stuff. And we stayed in touch. And then about a year later, I get a message from him saying he took my advice and applied to the Art Institute of Chicago. And he's there now. So it was a really, we've still never met. I actually did a painting of him for my latest show, though. We've stayed connected and he shares his work with me and we chat all the time. So, I mean, social media is incredible for that kind of stuff. And I can't wait to see what he's going to do one day.
I mean, that story really shows how good social media is at connecting us together as a community.
People who appreciate this and people who create this kind of work, they're very spread out. You never know where they're going to be. You expect them to be concentrated in big cities, but there's incredible artists that live all over the place. Social media has just been so wonderful for that. I love talking with it. There are a lot of young artists too that are just like coming out of art school and that, you know, have already been seeing this kind of work and then putting their own spin on it and challenging some of the things that, you know, my generation took for granted. And I think that's incredible. That's how it's supposed to be. I am just like so excited about where I feel like our community is headed.
Yeah, and you're really contributing to that with your art. If people took one thing away from your pieces, what would you hope that it would be?
The thing I hope people take away from my work, any of it really, is that they actually take the time to look at it and try to interpret it in their own way and understand that there is a story that's being told and that it's more than just a pretty picture on a wall. A lot of people are hesitant to ask about art or to question, you know, what they don't understand. Or I feel like a lot of times art has this very elite kind of perception that you have to be, you know, this extreme intellectual in order to appreciate art or to talk about art or to care about art. And I don't think any of that is true. I think art is for everyone. I think that if more people took the time to really look at it and connect with it, that they would get a lot more out of it and maybe want to make some of their own. So I guess I would say that for people looking at my work, take the time to really try to see what it says to you. It's okay if it says something different than what I was thinking when I made it. I don't always like to be really heavy-handed and tell people exactly what each painting means. It's kind of can be open to interpretation. I'm telling my story and putting it out there, and then it's up to everybody else to look at it and respond and see how it affects them. But I love that process. I love knowing when I'm painting, it's all about me and what's going on in my head, and I'm not thinking about anybody else. But then when I finish it and I put it in a gallery or I share it somewhere, I love hearing what people, how they interpret the work or what it means to them. Because a lot of the things that we go through, even if our experiences and our lives are very different, there's a lot of overlap, and I think the arts are the way that we can find those connections. So I hope to just be a small part of that.
Yeah, completely. I think the art is a really good communication tool. Another thing I've noticed while doing this project is sometimes where people are from has an impact on the art that they create. You mentioned earlier that you're from Ohio and you now live in California. What are the key differences between the two?
So actually, I lived in Ohio my whole life, my husband too. And then about 2.5 years ago, we moved to California. Very different world. I was surrounded by farms. I mean, there are farms here too, but it's different. It was a great place to grow up. I mean, I am not saying anything bad about it. In terms of like the people in my life, my family were great, but it is different being in a place where there is more open-mindedness. I think there are positive and negative things, I guess. The queer people that I connected with back in Ohio were so extremely passionate about activism and about trying to make a difference, because most of them came from backgrounds similar to mine where their identities were not accepted by their communities. So it creates a real fire in them to try to make things better. And I think, you know, here there's still some of that, but it's much more open-minded, you know, space, which is awesome, but there's still a lot of progress to be made. And it's harder, I think, to connect with people who are as passionate and dedicated about making change because things are sort of seem okay. So, you know, why bother? That is one thing I've known, like in my little town here, I live in Monterey. There is not even like a queer bar or, you know, gathering space or anything.
Are you not close to LA?
I'm about 5 hours from that. So it's a long drive for a night out. I would do it if it was the right show, though. San Francisco, too, is only about 2 hours away, and there's a lot of interesting stuff there. But, you know, anywhere you live, I think you just have to work hard to find the right people to connect with and make stuff happen.
Okay, so the next question I want to ask you is, what do you think queer art is?
For me, I would answer that question by saying queer art is art that someone makes and says is queer art. Because it's as simple as that, really. I think there are queer artists who paint or create work that has nothing to do with their queer identity. So they would not want their work identified that way. And that's fine. You know, if I was a landscape painter and every article about me said gay artist paints a landscape, I would be like, why are they doing that? And I think that there are, you know, heterosexual people, certainly in the film world, who have made films and made, you know, written books with characters that speak to queer audiences. So it's not really fair to say that queer art is only art that is made by queer people. I think queer art is anything that someone makes and says is queer art. I answer it the same way when people ask what is art and what isn't art, because that's a whole big debate that everyone in art school and in the art world has. And I always say it's art if somebody makes it and says it's art. I mean, that's the only way you can really define it, I think.
The one that always comes to mind for me when that question's asked is Tracy Emin's bed.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. People confuse disliking something with identifying it as art or not art. I mean, just because you don't like it or it's not your taste doesn't mean that it isn't art. And it also doesn't even mean that it isn't good. It just means it's not something you like. Yeah. I've learned the most, I feel like, from art that I didn't really like at first. I mean, I can remember being in college. This was before I was out. And so I was, you know, I went to college in Ohio. So I was in the same community where I grew up. It was a wonderful art school, but it was also not a great opportunity for me to really grow and explore who I was because I was still in the same environment. So I can remember seeing queer artists. I mean, just like some of the big name ones like Andy Warhol or Mapplethorpe or people who have gone on to become big influences for me now. But at that time, I was really trying to suppress that part of myself. So when I would see that work, it was almost offensive, or I felt like I didn't want to think about it or see it because I wasn't ready to deal with that. So, you know, the problem might not be the art. It might be you and where you are at that point in your life. And maybe, you know, you'll come back to it later and challenge. I always think it's good to challenge yourself with stuff like that and try to understand work, even if you don't initially love it, because a lot of times that's where you can learn the most. If you only expose yourself to what you already know and what you already like, then there's no growth there.
Yeah, it's always good to expose yourself to work you wouldn't normally. I really love how you put your activism across in your art. Does it ever get misconceived at all?
One of the things that I like to try and do is share my paintings in spaces where I'm not just preaching to the choir or showing them to people who agree with me. Especially when I lived in Ohio, I would intentionally put some of my more controversial paintings into like the state fair art exhibit or things where I knew it was going to be a lot of people there who did not share that opinion. And so I definitely had some fun, interesting responses, like the Noah's Gay Wedding Cruise I actually put into a show like that. I think it was the Ohio State Fair. And when I went to pick it up, tucked into the back of the canvas was this folded up piece of paper. Actually, it was five pieces of paper folded up into this small little wad. And I opened it up and this lady had written front and back on all five pages this letter to me about how the devil was guiding my hand when I made this painting and how I needed to accept Jesus and all of that. And I just thought, you you don't understand. But I did appreciate the effort that she took. And so I saved that little letter. It was its own little piece of art. But I've had a lot of people say things along those lines, like that I'm just trying to negatively influence, you know, young people. I've even had a lot of specifically gay men who did not appreciate the Cheesecake Boys at all because they felt that I was objectifying men in a negative way or portraying a side of men that they weren't comfortable with or that kind of stuff. So, you know, I know that that was not my intention with it. So I also, you know, I hear the feedback and I still have to decide what to do with that. And just, I know that not everything I do is going to work for everybody, but I just have to stay true to myself basically. So even though people sometimes misunderstand or misinterpret, that goes with the territory. At least they're talking about it, I guess. That's yeah. The positive. You know, there's certainly pushback from like conservative, you know, Christians or religious people that are just homophobic and take issue. But I've also gotten a lot of, you know, pushback to different projects from within the LGBT community. And I think that just speaks to how diverse we really are. And no one person can ever create something that's going to represent everybody. And I really kind of take issue with it when people expect that, because nobody can represent all the colors of the rainbow. You can only create or be true to yourself. So I think it's good to take people to task or to push for different things when you feel someone is wrong. But I also think that if you feel like you're not being represented or your perspective is not being portrayed, then I think it's also on you to go out and create something and do something to make that change happen. It's an important conversation, I think, and then action has to follow.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the pushback that you've had from within the community, and it's something that I've experienced a little bit since doing this project. Some people have taken issue with the word queer being used, which I completely understand, but we're using the word queer as an umbrella term to describe the diverse range of artists that we feature.
Even if it pisses people off, that's okay. And there's a definite generational issues, I guess, because people who maybe grew up at a time when queer was such a slanderous, horrible word might not understand or appreciate how it's being used now. And I think there are different things like that. People who have fought hard for one step of our progress as a community, taking issue with people who are pushing for something else, or, you know, some of the new labels that we have now that we didn't have before, and, you know, older LGBT people not understanding or appreciating that. And I feel like art can be a great way for both sides of any issue to communicate and share their perspective and hopefully come to a better understanding. And we need more of that in this world, because things cannot be summed up by memes and comments on social media. And I just see everyone becoming so divided in those areas. But you go to an art show or you go to see a film or something that really moves people, and that can bring people together in ways that nothing else can. So I think it's an awesome opportunity that we all have as creative people to make a difference.
How important do you think it is for people to continue making queer art?
I think queer art is vital, and it has been created since the, you know, beginning of any art that was ever made, because there have always been queer people. And you can look back at different civilizations like the ancient Greeks, where it was, you know, a bit more prevalent in their art, or all throughout history. But art, and specifically queer art, is important because it tells the story of our history. That's how we learn so much about different cultures and different periods of time, is through what they created. And if we don't have that legacy for ourselves and for our movement, then it's very easy to forget where we've been. And that can be a real hindrance to continuing to push forward. You can't you can't keep going forward if we keep taking steps back. And that's kind of the period I feel like we're in right now here in the US, politically, at least. We're just fighting for some of the things that we had been taking for granted for a while under the, you know, our current leadership. And I wonder if, did this happen because people have forgotten, you know, all of the things that we've done? Like, women have been fighting for their rights since, you know, the 40s and 50s to have control over their bodies, and all these different issues that feel new have been around for a long time. So I think, going back to your question, queer art is important because it tells our history and keeps us moving forward. It's not that we necessarily need to stay in any one period, or that the work that is made by, you know, one artist at one point in time represents the whole movement, but it's just another step, and it's hopefully something that continues to grow and change.
Do you think that queer art's becoming more mainstream?
I do. I think in some facets, certainly, like I was talking about with the books and the coloring book and that type of thing. But I think that anytime something becomes mainstream, you also maybe lose a little bit of what's unique or special about it. I can relate that to my experiences with Pride, going to Pride in Columbus, because the first few years that I went, it was a very fringe thing. You know, it was just drag queens and people in leather, you know, lesbians on motorcycles. And then the last Pride that I went to in Ohio before we moved, the parade was 3 hours long, but there were much fewer drag queens and there were a lot more banks and churches and things like that. And I think that that's true of anything that gets pushed into the mainstream. There was a film that was made about the Stonewall riot a couple years ago, I think, and it was completely whitewashed by the filmmaker because they felt that that would make it more sellable. So the, you know, rather than all of the people of color and the trans people who were there on the front lines, they were kind of replaced by this white guy from the Midwest who basically was portrayed as leading this riot. And so I think that's the danger of things becoming mainstream, is that you have to really fight to preserve the integrity of the work. And ultimately, you have to decide what's more important, telling something or creating something that is genuine or creating something that will sell. And the more mainstream something becomes, the more people that you have pushing for the sellable side. So it's difficult. You know, I do certainly create artwork that I hope will reach a lot of people, and that is more, I guess you could say, mainstream in a way. It's, you know, not, maybe not as overtly queer. And it's not that I'm trying to hide that side of myself. It's that I'm actually just showing another side, because we're all pretty complex people. But I would never intentionally try to cover up or portray myself differently or how I feel in my work just so that I could sell something. I think it's really important for artists to remember that, because there is a lot of pressure, and a lot people don't want to invest in something unless they know that it's going to return that investment. So that everyone wants to be safe. And I feel like there were a lot, maybe more edgy, interesting things happening, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago in some respects, because nobody even had the expectation that it was going to possibly be mainstream. So they figured, who cares? I'm just going to do what I want. And now there is that potential, but we have to be careful, I think.
Thanks for that, Paul. Before we go, is there anything that you want to add?
I don't think so. That was fun, though.
So sadly, we've come to the end of the first ever The Art of Being Queer podcast. I want to thank Paul for being such an amazing guest and sharing his work with us today. I want to say thank you to Queen Toast for creating the instrumentals used in this podcast. I want to thank our Patreons, Demo Demi and Alpha Wings. If you would like to support us on Patreon, head over to patreon.com/theartofbeingqueer. See you next time.